We'll stay in the general realm of weather in this first segment today. The main subject matter is the white stuff that planes trail behind in streaks across the sky. The prefix you use before the word trail tells where you stand on the issue. To science and to most people, they are contrails, but there are people who insist they are chemtrails. Paul Ruscher is Dean of Science at Lane Community College in Eugene and a meteorologist. He'll give a talk on the subject next Wednesday night at 7 on campus called Chemtrails, Climate Science, and Clickbait, a Meteorologist's View of Pseudoscience. And Paul Ruscher is here with us now. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Jeffrey.
So how long have you been involved in the atmospheric sciences?
Oh, I did my graduate work at Oregon State University in the 1980s, and after completing the PhD, I took a job at Florida State University as a professor for 25 years before coming back to Lane 4 years ago as a faculty member, and in the spring I was named science dean. Quite a while.
Okay, the reason I ask is because I wanted to know if you've been hearing about chemtrails pretty much your entire career.
For a very long time, but actually in the last 3 or 4 years in particular, it's really begun to get more on my radar, so to speak. As I was teaching, and I would often take students outside in our meteorology and atmospheric environment classes, and we would look at the sky and talk about clouds and cloud formation, and I'd always get questions from the people here about chemtrails versus contrails. And it became pretty clear to me that there are a lot of people who are very progressive on the environment who had some really serious misconceptions about contrails.
Do you have any idea how the idea got started? I mean, is there a square one for chemtrail theory that anybody can trace back to?
I know it goes back at least 15 years. There's some NASA researchers who've been working on this, on debunking the pseudoscience associated with it for over 10 years. And many people got hold of government reports and other things about what you might be able to do from an airplane to do various types of science experiments, cloud seeding to enhance or reduce precipitation and things. And people just, I think, started going off the rails in terms of what kinds of applications they were. People start noticing these things. They've been existing ever since we've had jet aircraft at high altitudes in the upper troposphere. And they say, well, I don't remember seeing them when I was smaller, or you know, something like that. And so it's just been perpetuated by, whether it's the internet or not, people can publish anything they want online these days. And it's made it very easy to disseminate information and misinformation.
So let's start with the basic science. Sure. Then what is a contrail, and what is it that goes on with planes and vapors?
Sure, a contrail is a made up word from the two words condensation and trail. When you burn fossil fuels, one of the byproducts of that combustion is water vapor. Water vapor coming out of a hot tailpipe, if you will, out of an airplane at an altitude of 30,000 to 35,000 feet, where the temperatures are 30 to 40 below zero, and at 40 below zero, it doesn't matter whether it's Celsius or Fahrenheit, the scales are equivalent at that temperature. As the water vapor exits the nozzle, it's moving into extremely cold and also very dry air. That water vapor will immediately condense into visible cloud drops that collectively are no larger than about 20 to 30 microns, which is a millionth of a meter. A micron being a millionth of a meter, and those drops are collected, immediately, and sometimes they'll then freeze into ice crystals, and they can trail behind that plane. And depending on the ambient conditions that occur when the contrail first appears, they can dissipate very quickly if the air is very dry, or if the air aloft is very moist, as it often is here in the Northwest. They can spread, and they can persist for very long periods of time. In fact, they can occupy a substantial portion of the sky after long periods of times with many jet aircraft flying at high altitudes.
So there are certain levels of temperature and moisture that are going to make them hang around longer.
Yes, that's okay. Correct. Yep. Generally speaking, if you've got temperatures below about negative 20 degrees Celsius or centigrade, and you've got dry conditions aloft, you can have contrails that will be visible for very short periods of time. And if conditions are right and conditions aloft are extremely dry, you won't see contrails at all. And that's why there's a lot of misconception about this, is people think that they're spraying when contrails are visible. They're spraying something, whether it's aluminum. I mean, there's all kinds of misconceptions out there in terms of what's happening. But you're just seeing a byproduct of combustion of fossil fuels.
All right, Paul Ruscher is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the Dean of Science at Lane Community College. He'll be talking about chemtrails, climate science, and clickbait, a meteorologist's view of pseudoscience. Part of Earth Science Week at LCC. That'll be next Wednesday, the 26th at 7 in the evening. You can join us now on the Jefferson Exchange. Lots of questions about this through the years, as we've noticed through our listeners. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So back to the point you just mentioned, though, there are certain conditions in which there will be no contrails simply because it is that dry?
That's right. If it's and it, because it's so cold aloft, there is a very limited occupancy, if you will, or space available for water molecules. I mean, water is naturally present in the atmosphere at levels of about a half to 1% of the total volume of gases that are present in air. When you get to very cold temperatures, though, there's very little water vapor before the air becomes saturated. And at very dry, under very dry conditions, when we have very strong ridges of high pressure here in the Northwest, you will have air that's so dry aloft that the water will evaporate virtually as soon as it comes out of the tailpipe or the nozzle of the jet aircraft engine. And as a result, you will not see enough water vapor condensing to make a visible contrail.
So as you read the accounts of people who insist that, no, they're not contrails, they are chemtrails, what is the purported mission? What's the reason for spraying something in the atmosphere?
The reason varies, but a lot of the reason ties to this issue of climate science and climate change, and that is that the theory would go the following. If you increase the cloudiness at high altitudes, you can reduce the amount of sunlight reaching the ground and therefore reduce the amount of heating by the Earth's surface, which then absorbs that sunlight and re-emits it in the form of infrared radiation to the atmosphere. And thus you're reducing the greenhouse effect. The so-called greenhouse effect. So this is called geoengineering, and it's a process whereby, you know, one of the ideas is how can we fix this global warming problem, which is reducing or which is creating global warming, climate change. And geoengineering is a process whereby engineers will try to fix problems, and they do this all the time in different areas, and they propose ideas, some of which are kind of ridiculous. Polluting the atmosphere, for example, will make the atmosphere more hazy, reduce the amount of sunlight, reduce the amount of warming, but nobody wants to live in a more polluted atmosphere. Contrails, or chemtrails, if you will, would do the same thing in that if you sprayed enough stuff in the upper atmosphere and could make clouds, the idea goes that you reduce the amount of solar heating of the ground, and then you reduce the heating in the atmosphere. The problem with that, though, is if you're doing that kind of geoengineering, you're increasing the amount of ice crystals in the upper atmosphere that can persist for long periods of time. And research by NASA and other scientists show that cirrus clouds, which are the types of clouds that are most similar to contrails, and particularly layered cirrus like cirrostratus clouds, actually enhance global warming because they're such good greenhouse gas absorbers. Ice crystals are almost nearly completely effective absorbers of outgoing long-wave radiation from the Earth's surface. That's the greenhouse effect, and a lot of that radiation gets re-emitted back to the surface.
Paul Ruscher, there has been, and I believe there still is, the function of cloud seeding, where you'll attempt to make precipitation happen by spraying silver iodide or some other sort of salt. I mean, they still do this at the Medford Airport, for example, on cloudy days.
Mm-hmm.
Does that look anything like the process that people think is chemtrails?
You know, it. I think a lot of people are misdirecting those ideas to assume the same process is going on. A lot of people will talk about how helicopters, they can, you know, why don't we see contrails from all planes or all helicopters? But cloud seeding is another one of these ideas that it is a geoengineering principle idea that you're trying to enhance precipitation or reduce fog or whatever the mechanism would be by making the efficient process of precipitation generation more realistic. But it's hard statistically to prove that cloud seeding is effective. There have been a lot of studies and control experiments on this, and the National Academy of Sciences recently came out with a panel showing that there really is not a substantial amount of proof that it's effective in doing what you think you're doing. because as soon as you perform the experiment, you're changing the experiment. It's a classic case of Heisenberg's uncertainty principle.
Paul Ruscher, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Lane Community College Dean of Science. We'll be talking about contrails and chemtrails next week, and you can join us now at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Exchange.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
I've seen film of high-altitude propeller-driven bombers in World War II, and they left contrails,
yes.
As well. So it's not just jets.
You're right.
It has to be high altitude and it has to be a hot engine.
Right. And you also can enhance the effect of contrails or the production of contrails. Anytime there's flow over a wing, you create a small low-pressure wake zone. And just reducing the pressure in an atmosphere is sometimes sufficient to produce a contrail or condensation that would trail off a wing. And you add the hot engine and the exhaust, and you're going to make it even more effective.
Happen, for example, close to the ground then in foggy conditions?
It
or something?
Can. If you are ever taking off from Medford or Eugene or some other airport in a foggy day, you often will be able to look at the wingtips and see trailing contrails off the wingtips.
I asked this because I remember seeing this on Facebook a few months ago. Yep. Somebody put the post up that said, look, they forgot to turn the chemtrails off when they landed in San Francisco.
Yeah, and so many of those posts are tongue-in-cheek, too, which is kind of why I added clickbait to the title of my talk, is to try to talk about how to find things on the Internet. If you're really interested in researching these things, how do you tell what a good scientific source versus a pseudoscientific source would be? But thanks for your call, Mark. I appreciate the link there with the prop-driven and the old, you know, World War II pictures of contrails.
True, yeah. Thanks for that, Mark. So how do you tell the sites that are worthy of your time and attention from the ones that are just spewing pseudoscience?
Sometimes it's difficult because there are reputable sites in the .com and .net world as well as disreputable sites, and so it's often difficult to tell. You really want to look for sites that provide access or references to the scientific literature. And if you're really doing a good job as a scientist, a good scientist is always going to remain at some level of skepticism. Go read the journal article if you really want to do it. Some of these are not very accessible and not very readable. But if you find good quotes about scientific articles that are not just cherry-picked, and that I mean you're not picking a part of a sentence that says something, but you're looking at the whole frame of an argument, you can probably trust that material. And so, you know, I tend to avoid .com sites as a primary reference just out of, you know, just not rule number one, but I don't exclude them from all processes of, you know, discourse and whatnot. A lot of teachers won't let their students use Wikipedia, for example, because it's a highly mobile site in terms of,
people are
dynamic
editing
site.
It.
People are always editing it. But the neat thing about Wikipedia is they force you to put references in for a lot of these things, and those references are often to journal articles in the public domain, so they can be a great first source for finding information out. And that allows you to do some critical thinking. And that's one of the things we do at Lane is, you know, a core value here is to try and get all of our students thinking critically about the information that they come across.
Well, you mentioned that this comes partly out of taking students outside and having them spout the chemtrails theory. And so I know that there are lots of people around me, or at least a few I've run into, who wonder what is happening on those days when the sky is a little mottled, just not so clear and blue, and there are fat contrails crisscrossing the sky. It looks like a tic-tac toe board.
Yep.
So what's happening there?
Okay, so one of the reasons why people are accurately perceiving that there are a lot more of these things now than there were when they were kids is jets are flying higher, so they're flying at colder temperatures. And there are probably between 10 and 15 times as many high-altitude aircraft flying as there were when we were all young. And so you've got a population issue here of the amount of jets flying at higher and colder altitudes trying to take advantage of that thinner air that gives them the chance to, and if, in many cases, flying the jet stream, to get a good tailwind to reduce their fuel consumption. there are changes in jet fuel that I'm not privy to. I haven't studied jet fuel combinations or anything. But, you know, if you look at the military, for example, the last thing the military wants is a contrail coming out of their nozzles, because it reveals where their planes are to the enemy. This whole idea that the military is spraying or NASA is spraying, they don't want to reveal where their planes are in an act of, you know, in a war situation, for example. But so that's kind of one of the answers I typically tell people about. The other thing is climate change is producing warmer temperatures that is increasing the amount of water vapor in the atmosphere over time. And so a lot of that water vapor is finding its way to the upper troposphere, altitudes of 30 to 39,000 feet where a lot of these jets are flying. And so as a result, the contrails are being made in a more close to saturated atmosphere.
Okay, so
you're adding that water vapor, and you're going to see more contrails just because of that.
As you deal, well, first of all, I mean, why do you suppose the chemtrail theory is so durable?
It's durable in part, I think, because you've got a huge population of people who are really interested in the environmental issues, and they're interested in progressive environmental issues and trying to develop an understanding of how we're changing our atmosphere, how we're changing our overall environment, usually in negative ways. So they're very passionate about the environment, and they latch on to this idea that either there's a chemical spraying going on, and somebody's doing this for nefarious reasons, or there are also geoengineers who are trying to shove this climate change stuff down our throats, and we don't agree that it's happening. So there's two different camps, I think, of the people that I've talked to, of people who are either pro-environmental movement and think this spraying is going on because the government or different people are doing it. But then there's also people who are not yet understanding of the global climate change problem and phenomenon, who are claiming the government is trying to geoengineer a solution. There are people who are passionate, but maybe not just have taken the time to become well-informed. There's some really good work that's come out of Georgetown University and Yale University Communication on Climate Science that divides the political and idea spectrum in America into six different camps, and there's many different reasons why people are not accepting of climate change science or not accepting of chemtrail versus contrail ideas, even whether, you know, we went to the moon in the 1960s and these kind of things.
Oh, huh. Okay.
Yeah.
So
it's part of that too, I think, unfortunately.
Okay, resistance to science from a couple of different angles here. Mm-hmm. Okay. Chemtrails, climate science, and clickbait, a meteorologist's view of pseudoscience, is the presentation that Paul Ruscher will deliver again next week at Lane Community College in Eugene, 7 o'clock on Wednesday night. Do you know the room number off the top of your head?
It's 112, 113, and 114, and we'll also be streaming online.
Okay, and this is the Downtown Center?
At the Downtown Center. Yep.
Okay. Paul Ruscher, Science Dean at Lane Community College, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey, very much.
All right, take care.